Madam Speaker, St. Louis and I rise in support of the article of impeachment against Donald J. Trump. If we fail to remove a white supremacist president who incited a white supremacist insurrection, it's communities like Missouri's 1st District that suffer the most. The 117th Congress must understand that we have a mandate to legislate in defense of Black lives. The first step in that process is to root out white supremacy, starting with impeaching the white supremacist in chief. Thank you, and I yield back.
Yes, it is Thursday. Thursday, that's right, I said that right. Thursday, January 14th, 2021. Yes, it's a special Thursday edition of Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Welcome, everybody. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our death cult coup survivor, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, oh, but it was Cori Bush in the intro today, everybody, making AOC look like the moderate. I freaking love it. On today's show, Donald Trump becomes the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice. We'll see where this goes in terms of, like, the trial. We'll see where it goes in terms of conviction. We'll see, like, you know, how much politics Mitch McConnell wants to play and all that fun stuff. 10 Republicans joined the Democrats in voting to impeach Trump. No, my representative was not one of them. As the days go by, we keep on finding out more about what happened. We find out that the head of the Capitol Police lied to legislators who were asking about plans ahead of the Wednesday's events. The FBI has released a report ahead of the insurrection, warning that there were indications that Trump supporters were calling for war. And now the FBI is warning the state Capitol buildings may now be targets over this weekend. FBI investigators looking into Wednesday's right-wing insurrection are starting to look at legislators who may have coordinated with organizers of the mob. That's right. Looks like they may have coordinated with the insurrectionists. Representative Ariana Pressley confirmed that the panic buttons in her office were ripped out before the insurrection, and Representative James Clyburn confirmed that his private office, where he does most of his work, was sacked, leading to suspicions of an inside job. Right? They went to where people aren't supposed to know he's at. And Conan the Barbarian released a video Wednesday calling for the insurrection, America's Kristallnacht. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Sorry, it's just like the end of that video with the Conan sword and stuff like that always gets me a little confused. And Parler is gone for now, and the GOP is crying about it. Yes, one of my favorite moments is when you had a GOP lawmaker speaking out against the impeachment with a mask that said censored on it, and she's screaming through it. So you got the biggest national platform you want, and you're saying you're censored. Go figure. And James Comey, yeah, that James Comey, is actually out there calling for Biden to pardon Trump. Fuck that guy. Yeah, you know, the same guy who helped hand Trump the presidency back in 2016, too. No, I'm not saying he was the only reason before everybody jumps on me for that. And D.C. hotel workers from Unite Here, Local 25, I believe, are hint at a wildcat strike ahead of the inauguration to help stave off any repeat of last Wednesday's insurrection. In a statement, the union said, quote, "We are calling on hotels in the D.C. region to close ahead of inauguration unless they are hosting security personnel. Any hotel that stays open must permit workers to stay home and or leave the moment they feel unsafe." That would be probably the moment I see a Confederate flag come through the front doors in my mind. And fast food workers are calling for a nationwide strike on Monday, January 18th, to urge the Biden administration to raise the minimum wage to at least $15 an hour. I should also say, today Biden is supposedly releasing his COVID relief plan, which hopefully maybe it'll come out while we're talking today. We'll see. A little closer to home, it's been another wild week in Pennsylvania, especially for State Senator Doug Mastriano. Turns out going down to D.C. and renting all those buses is coming back to haunt them. WHYY reported that Senator Mastriano used $3,400 in campaign cash to pay for buses to take the insurrectionists to D.C. And Media Matters reported that, yes, Mastriano frequently goes on a QAnon-associated podcast and in recent weeks called the effort to overturn the election a death match with the Republican Party. Death match.
Democrat, I'm sorry.
With the Democratic Party. My fault. I should have caught that. Yeah, for the record, Sean put that in. A death match with the Democrat Party. I don't know. Whatever. We'll talk about that in the show. Mastriano's also calling on Trump supporters to stand down this weekend as insurrectionists plan on railing outside the Pennsylvania Capitol. I don't know, maybe Mastriano's getting a little concerned for his own hide at this point, maybe. I don't know. But anyways, as the insurrectionists plan on railing outside the Pennsylvania Capitol this weekend and all of next week, in a Facebook post, Mastriano stated, "Please do not participate in rallies and protests over the next 10 days. Let's focus on praying for our nation during these troubled times," in a very unconvincing acting job. Frank Scavo, former congressional candidate from northeastern Pennsylvania, he organized a bus trip from Old Forge to last weekend's insurrection and was caught repeatedly lying about his involvement in insurrection. But you know what? They caught the Old Forge pizza still warm in his office. No, just kidding. First, he told reporters that he was nowhere near the Capitol, and then he told them that he was close to the Capitol, but they didn't go inside, and now there's photographic evidence that he was inside the Capitol during the insurrection. Must have just got lost. He was wandering, trying to get back to his bus. Pennsylvania Republicans move forward with their plans to gerrymander the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in response to Republicans losing three Supreme Court seats in 2015. Republicans are using recent PA Supreme Court rulings during the 2020 election as excuses for their latest attack on the court. This is about maintaining, trying to hold on to minority rule. I mean, how much more are they going to gerrymander it? Basically, what they want to do is they want to take it. I think they want to have it done by districts now to give them the edge. Anyways,
that is what gerrymandering is.
Exactly. In happier news, yeah, but I mean, whatever. We'll talk about that. But it's a statewide election, right? Instead of doing it, no help. Yeah. Anyways, my point. In happier news, State Senator Jim Brewster won his final court battle and is now seated. And all applause go out to PA Democrats for railing around Jim Brewster, right? And playing the partisan card on this like this and not getting bogged down in terms of like, well, what's his politics? No. Man, you just get all behind it and get him in there and you recognize what was going on. It's awesome. State Representative Elizabeth Fiedler has been named the chair of the newly formed Progressive Policies for Working People Subcommittee. This is Pennsylvania, folks, and we've got that going on. The new subcommittee will be part of the Pennsylvania House Democratic Policy Committee and will give progressive lawmakers more of a legislative voice within the House Democratic Caucus. That's awesome. And more good news in state politics, the crew heading the Pennsylvania Legislative Climate Caucus is looking good. The caucus will be chaired by Representative Danielle Friel-Otten. She's a Democrat from Chester. The vice chair will be Representative Nancy Guntz, which we're going to talk a little bit about her too as well. She's a freaking stand-up Democrat from Montgomery County. And you've heard him on our show, Representative Rick Kajewski, Democrat from Philadelphia. They're all going to be on this, and they will serve, and he will serve as secretary. And if you don't know Nancy Guntz, like I said, we'll tell you about the little note that she posted to her office door for potential insurrectionists this weekend. Freaking awesome. And Posse Chancellor Greenstein had trouble maintaining the good guy Chancellor McGreeny shtick in an open Spotlight PA interview on Zoom last night. Yeah. It's funny when you get pushed. Anyways, in today's last call, we're going to see what's going on. Sean, I'll talk what's happening. We got a bit of a condensed week this week. Obviously, you had Out to Coop Live this past Monday. We're going a little bit early on Thursday ahead of the potential like Harrisburg lockdowns and threats to national or statewide security on this weekend. But, you know, we'll give you the latest on Free Will. They've got a couple new releases. They got a Fool's Gold Mash, and they've got a couple new bottle releases, which you might want to check out. Want to remind you to tune in to Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure to subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. And it's coming Monday at Out the Coop Live. Yeah, we're getting some, it looks like we're going to get some kind of cool shows coming up. But we're going to launch it because Pashi goes back to campus, or back to classes start next Tuesday, a day after Martin Luther King Day. So we will be talking with KU activists. KU activists is a new group that kind of grew out of some student action against the lockdown at Kutztown University. But KU activist Paul Burlett, Samantha Marinchik, and Matt Mayer. We'll be talking a little bit about back to school and the struggles ahead. They've got an awesome list of demands that they have been sending out, which is basically a manifesto for a path of organizing going forward. And I'm really looking forward to talking about it. Want to remind you that, you know, if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media, and you can help support Pearl No Punch's homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your level of support. In times like these, we need to invest in our progressive media infrastructure to keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. And we're in this fight. We're in the fight for our future, if that is not kind of crystal clear after last week. And we need you. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Or you know what? If you're still on the fence and you just want to drop a few bucks in our tip jar instead, you can just go to paypal.me/rcpress. That's paypal.me/rcpress. And just as a little note, through the end of January, if you become a patron over at patreon.com/rcpress for $5 a month or more, we will send you a little thank you gift. You can either have your choice of On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder, On Tyranny, 20 Lessons for the 20th Century. This is a kind of amazing go-to book on kind of like what to look out for and what we're living through, actually, and kind of tyranny. Or if you don't want that one, you can choose to have Michael Brooks' book, Against the Web, A Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right. Michael Brooks, of course, was the co-host of the Majority Report. Just an amazing all-around person. Unfortunately, we lost him to 2020. But it's an amazing little book. So choice of yours. It's your choice. Become a patron of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. All right, Sean. I guess, you know, it's getting a little old to say, you know, this has been a crazy week. But it
feels like it's been forever. Like this week in particular, like we had a couple of phone calls yesterday and just felt like, holy shit, like it's been a week since our last call. And it feels like it's been a month or a year at this point.
Yeah, you know, and I think that did you see AOC's video that she hear her stream?
I did not.
So she, I mean, you've probably seen clips of it out there, everybody. If she's talked about, she had a traumatizing experience, and she came very close to where she felt that she was going to be killed. And she said because of security issues, she couldn't talk about it, kind of what exactly happened yet. She talked about not only being afraid of the insurrectionist, but was concerned about being in some of the safe rooms with some of her Republican colleagues who have basically threatened her in the past. So my point of this is I would definitely check that out. Matter of fact, I was going to go. I have some sound from her that was going to be our intro today until freaking Cori Bush came and knocked it out of the park and the impeachment stuff there. But one of the things that she said was, you know, she talked about it as a traumatizing experience. And if you remember on the show last week, one of the things that Sean and I were both kind of really pushing back against was this whole idea that we should somehow just kind of move on, right? Get past it and so on. Since that's taken place, since that's happened, what AOC was saying about the trauma of it, that alone should have been enough for lawmakers last week to basically say, like, you know, we got to wait. We can't even process what just happened. Right. But that kind of like, yeah, let's get back. This is not who we are. Let's move past it. Let's go get along. Let's put that behind us. That just kicked right in. Thank God that got halted, because not only are the experiences of people and just the trauma that's just coming out, we're like, it seems like hour by hour, we're finding out more about what actually took place during that insurrection. And it gets, I don't know about you, Sean, but it like it, it's more disturbing for me as the days go on.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like we're finding out who, that this was definitely part of an inside job. I think that's safe to say. You know, Arianna Presley said her panic buttons were removed from her office before the insurrection. James Clyburn, who has a private office where he's not seen publicly, where he does his work, was trashed. There are videos of insurrectionists on going up now talking about the floor plans of the Capitol exactly. and where they are going. You have another state representative or another congresswoman saying that Boebert and others were giving tours to the insurrectionists the day before, like almost like a reconnaissance mission. You know, like you have people who were serving in the military and in other like branches of military using words like reconnaissance in a way where, you know, like that's pretty much like what they were doing, scoping things out. It definitely feels like there was an inside job. And also like, you know, the news of like Mo Brooks and Andy Biggs and others working with Stop the Steal organizers for the rally on the insurrection rally on last week, you know, and then you have, you know, even here in Harrisburg, you had Jim Jordan and Scott Perry talking at Stop the Steal rallies after the election. You know, like there's a reason why, in my opinion, there's a reason why these people are coming out so hard for unity and moving forward from this is because they themselves don't want to face the accountability and the roles they played in this, thinking that they can get away with staging or helping or playing some hand in some in the insurrection.
Yeah, this is like it's about their own hides. I agree with you 100%. That this has nothing to do with, I mean, it's
like
actually
the impeachment show yesterday. Like, I feel like some
disgusting.
Of it is, yeah, I feel like some of it, you know, that there are Republicans who are legitimately afraid for their own lives over this. But like, this is the monster they created. Like this is what they created. Like, I remember about a month ago or a month and a half ago, Kim Ward was, remember that quote in New York Times from Kim Ward? I'm afraid I'll have my house bombed.
Yep, exactly.
Like, like this is what you fucking created by aligning yourselves and mainstreaming militia people. You know, we've been talking about this for years now, especially on this podcast, with how like open the Republican Party in Pennsylvania has embraced white nationalism and the malicious people. Like you remember, like 2015, the gun rallies with Daryl Metcalf, my first couple ones.
Exactly.
But like, here's where the change was. Like, it was more or less like conservatives with their guns on the Capitol steps, Boy Scout troops, more or less like your Second Amendment right activists. And then like once Trump came in office, there was a switch that was flipped. Like, where these became heavily armed events with militia people, with Proud Boys, with fascists and stuff like that. Like, and they openly accepted these people into the party. And like, they mainstreamed this segment into the Republican Party. We watched it up close. We saw what they did, right? Like, I mean, like anyone who has not been paying attention, I mean, anyone who's been paying attention to the Republican Party over the past 4 years is really not surprised by what happened last week.
Right.
And I think it's not going to be shocking to learn that there's going to be that there were actors on the inside who were doing this or played a complicit role.
I agree. And the one thing I would say is, I think the main shift, if I had to kind of quibble with that characterization at all, would be this, is that if you remember back in 2008 and 2009 was the first time that we began to see these kind of armed protests, right? When it came to kind of Obamacare, right? And kind of over healthcare reform, right? That's when we started seeing the flags of the, you know, every once in a while you have to water the tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants kind of coming out there. People with their AR-15s showing up, storming in different state capitals and stuff. The difference is kind of, I think you put your finger right on it, is that the difference between the kind of the white supremacy and the white nationalist and the kind of the violent insurrectionists that were present during like the Tea Party and the Obama administration and what happened to the Trump administration is that he welcomed them inside, right? So the Republican Party has been playing with fire for decades now. But it always sought, right, to try to keep those folks at a little bit of at arm's length. The Tea Party was the first scare, right? When some of those folks got inside, right, and formed the Freedom Caucus and all this. But eventually, you know, they started playing ball to a certain degree, right? McConnell was able to kind of like get those folks kind of together. They were able to kind of control things in the House. And the Republican Party was like, oh, look at this. This is actually good for us, right? It's helping us win things. But when Trump came up, he basically says, you know, welcome QAnon. And we're going to actually use the language of the conspiracy theorists and the white nationalism as a way of defining a presidency. And then now you're just like freaking all, you know, all bets are off.
Yeah.
But man, it just, it's,
I mean, it's just been, you know, more views that are coming out. Like, yeah. What's that? All right. My stream's. Yeah.
Yeah. Your stream's breaking down a little bit.
Especially
that's what all I right, heard.
Switch my video off. Is that
okay? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. But no, I feel like with what's going on here, it's like a lot of this is coming from, I wouldn't be surprised if these people end up in jail, especially someone like Gates or Boebert, Marjorie Greene. Like I think these people have to get expelled from the legislature, but I wouldn't be surprised if they end up in jail over this.
Yeah. I mean, look, what they did is pretty, I mean, horrendous. I mean, I heard some of these, you know, some of these people, you know, talking from the floor, you know, some of the interviews that I've seen with, you know, Republican lawmakers that are, you know, saying that we need to get beyond this and trying to pull off. They could barely even pull off that kind of like heartfelt sense of like, you know, we can't just destroy our nation. We have to kind of pull together for America. They used to be able to do that stuff. But, you know, I think once the fact that you saw like police officers, right, and military, you know, and like, you know, getting beaten by these people, right? There's a report now. There's one Capitol Hill police officer who's going to lose an eye, right? One of those ones that was beaten. One was killed. Another one kind of died by apparent suicide a couple days later, right? And then when you saw those pictures of that guy, and we talked about this last week, but there was this guy standing on the
between the metal doors, and you see his face mask getting ripped off.
Oh God!
Like yeah, almost getting gouged by the protesters because he was stuck between a metal door.
Right, that was so disturbing. That one was freaking disturbing. And there's another one where you have one of the insurrectionists is standing there with his Blue Lives Matter flag, tearing it up on one of the balconies, throwing it down on the police and calling them traitors. Right? I mean, when that happens, right? I mean, where do you go from there? I mean, it comes really hard to kind of say, now we're going to say that, you know, I don't know. I just... The Republican Party right now has lost control of the wildfire.
Yeah.
And
this is the Frankenstein they created.
Yes. And I think we have to be really clear-headed about this. I mean, this is why, you know, look, I've been reading this, you know, rereading Timothy Snyder's book, you know, on tyranny. I got this other great little book called Demagoguery and Democracy. Right. It's another one. It's a great little book by Patricia Roberts Miller to think about it as just a way of kind of focusing my own head about the reality of where we're at. I mean, you know, a lot of people have referred to these insurrectionists. And I think this is actually a good characterization in some ways as kind of like, you know, these kind of cosplayers. Right. And they like to dress up and do this stuff. But the thing is that they've been in that cosplay world now for so long that they think that world is the real world, right? The conspiracy theorists, like the Fox News kind of like rejection of reality, right? Is that, you know, they're inside that bubble. I mean, this is the Truman Show, right? To them. And these people are not just going to say, oh, well, okay, I have to accept that Trump lost. I mean, you listen to some of the interviews that people did with some of the participants, and they're gone. The, you know, Mitch McConnell and like these Republican leaders, they've got nothing. And I think it's hilarious to some degree that Mitch McConnell was actually kind of like leaking to the, you know, leaking his private thoughts to, you know, to the world, you know, and fuck him for that, by the way. But he was like leaking his private thoughts that, like, you know, maybe that this is by impeaching Trump, that's finally going to kind of allow them to purge Trump and the supporters from the party. He's like, no, you know what that does? You know what that does? That's going to just kind of increase and sharpen the civil war in the party. And these people are going to triple down. We've talked about this before, is that a good chunk of those folks have already like left Fox News. And they are now in this kind of, you know,
OAN, Facebook,
Newsmax world. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Something like way worse than Fox.
way worse.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like, it was actually pretty funny. You see, like, Mastriano came out, released a statement afterwards, like, condemning the violence. And the people he organized rallies with, like Nick Fuentes, who was in Speaker Pelosi's office, said unfollowed. Like, you see, like these are the people you've, like, were catering, and they're not going away now.
Right.
Like, it's going to be very dangerous. Well, the next several months and several weeks.
I agree. And, like, you know, again, the fact that now you're talking about, you know, the FBI has issued these warnings for state capitol buildings now may be targets. And it looks like that some of the same folks, you know, again, there was this, Sean, I don't even remember, but the parlor hack was after our show last week, right?
No, it was like the day before.
It was the day before. I can't remember.
I think the parlor hack was Saturday. Yeah, it was over the weekend.
Yeah, because I can't remember what we actually talked about on the show and what we just talked about on the phone, right? As these things were kind of,
no, the parlor hack happened Saturday. Yeah.
So it happened Saturday. So, like, you know, that from that hack, we're starting to see some of the, you know,
What happened was,
yeah, go ahead,
pretty much like Parler was built on a WordPress format, which is very easy to hack. They gained like an API security and created a bunch of bots. These, internet warriors, as I think we should be calling them. And they pretty much were able to, you know, once the post gets deleted, it's still there. Like, if you use WordPress, you delete a post, the post is still on the back end.
Right.
And they pretty much scraped all the information off the back end of Parler, was able to get all the metadata, all the stuff in raw files. So, like, videos, pictures, anything that was created within the bounds of the Capitol. And that came with the GPS and the people who posted it. And in order to get verified on Parler, you have to use your driver's license front and back. So now there's also, like, anyone who was verified on Parler that was in the Capitol building during the insurrection and using it, like, they have their information. It will be very interesting. I hope this becomes public information at some point. And it'll be interesting to see how this is. I mean, there's already a couple of accounts on Twitter that are uploading videos from Parler of the insurrection, and you just see people just bear spraying, like, Capitol police officers.
Well, that's just it, right? I mean, you saw, I mean, there was that one video, I don't know, there was no description of the video or what people knew about it, because I'm sure they were just putting it out there, but it was the first time I'd seen it. It almost looks like there's a scene in the tunnels. Right, where, because you have these kind of security gates, like the metal security gates are coming down and they're wedging underneath them to kind of keep them from coming down. They're throwing chairs at Capitol police officers. They're pepper spraying the police officers. I mean, these folks.
You've had police officers, Capitol police officers, who spend time in the Middle East and stuff like that, and they said last Wednesday was worse than anything they ever saw in combat.
Yeah,
like, for those comparisons to come out, you know, it must have been something.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy.
And then there's video of Trump coming out and celebrating the attack on the Capitol in the background. Like, I mean, just like...
Well, I mean, Trump and his family, right? They had like a freaking watch party for it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Trump Jr. was like you know, he was out
dancing
there.
Dancing with...
Yeah.
I mean, like I said before, these people are... The Trump family are our equivalent to Uday and Hussein.
Yeah.
Like, the Saddam family. Like, this is who they are. Like, you know what I mean? This is, like, at this point. Like...
Well, you know, this is what, you know, I think that this is why, you know, I think this was after our podcast last week, too, as well. But you had Arnold Schwarzenegger come out with that video.
Yeah.
And I made a little bit of fun of it kind of in the intro today because he, you know, he closes things out with like the Conan sword. If you haven't seen the video, the link will be in the show notes today. But, you know, frankly, I thought that was one of the strongest statements coming from a Republican, right? And the comparison of what was actually at stake. And he talked about his personal history growing up in the aftermath of Nazi, you know, in Nazi Germany, where he's Austria, like of the Nazi occupation of Austria. And he called what happened in the Capitol America's Kristallnacht, right? And that should really be sticking in our head about what
I didn't even hear about the video until my mom texted me and said, like, you should watch the video that like Conan posted on my Facebook wall. Like, these are tough conversations I've had with my mom over the past several months. Like, explaining to her what Kristallnacht was, explaining to her like what the purges were within Nazi Party, like the Night of the Long Knives. Like, and going through that history with her and just explaining it and telling her about Trump. And it's like, I feel like what happened at the Capitol last Wednesday awoken her to that. Like, you know what I mean? Like it clicked after months of explaining what the end game with the Republican Party is and what Trump is doing and the big lie that Trump has been telling about the elections. Like, I remember telling my mom before the election, I was just like, I'm worried about the lies that they're spreading and the massive disinformation that's been going on within the Republican Party about this upcoming election.
Right.
And it's not going to end nice. And, like, we saw a preview of that. I mean, and, like, I told her, like, my biggest fear is the massive amounts of misinformation that's just been thrown out there by Republicans over the past several months, and just like it's, we see what those lies have done.
Right.
And also like, it is a big lie. Like they've been participating in a big lie for months about the election being fraudulent.
Absolutely. 100%.
Like, I mean, it's a raw comparison to what Goebbels and Hitler did in Nazi Germany, but like it's the truth.
Right. And I think that, you know, right now there's, I'm very happy to see a whole lot of, folks on the left, right. And, you know, and I'm even like center left, right. Not your kind of like, you know, milquetoast, Democrats, but you're, you know, basically started looking at this with a very clear-eyed view. Like, it's been bothering me a little bit, some of the initial responses, even some of the stuff now. If you watch some of MSNBC, you get some of the kind of Democratic Party kind of communication apparatchiks on there, and they're trying to spin all this stuff. They're still in that kind of like spin mode of trying to make scoring points of political advantage here, and not really stepping back for a moment and saying, hey, this is super, super serious. But there's been a whole lot of folks who've been digesting what's going on here and saying, no, we're starting to connect the dots here. We need to be connecting the dots with not just Trump, but the whole Republican Party. I mean, what the left has
been the Republican infrastructure that was spending money on this. The Republican Association of Governors. I mean, you know, like these capitalists who have been promising to stop the floodgates of money over the past week. You know, the Koch brothers and the other, like Ken Langone and other CEOs and massive mega donors to the Republican Party. Like, yeah, this is a problem they created with their money and their dark money. But now you have companies coming out and donors coming out saying, we're done giving money, political donations. And like, the reason why they're doing this is because if we fall down as a country, they lose their wealth.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, the FBI, I think, will be somewhat serious about this because the FBI is here to protect empire and the FBI wants to keep the status quo, and the status quo is not having a fascist coup overrunning the government. Like,
absolutely. Like, this is the time, right? This is also the time where, look, I don't want
to. It's time to sink the Republican Party.
Well, that absolutely, 100%. But frankly, this is, look, we're not going to have many moments like this. Well, I don't know, because this dynamic of what's happening right now, what happened with this insurrection, is not going to go away anytime soon. I think we're both agreed on that.
I think this is going to start the death spiral of the Republican Party.
That true. But here, now, long-term thinking here, right, one of the worst things that happened, in my view, right, and I know that this is not going to be like, you know, everyone is not going to love this, to hear this, but I think one of the, there's a few historical errors, right, that what happened with the Democratic Party in the 1960s, right? So on one of them is something that Sean and I have talked a lot about on the podcast for, you know, for years now, and that has been the separation from labor, right? That has been, you know, the turn towards the professional middle class, right? The turn towards professionals and experts as the kind of, you know, the focus of the Democrats, and basically, you know, telling labor like, yeah, where else are you going to go, right? So labor still there trying to do this. The Democrats put on the mantle of we are for working people, but have increasingly been about big tech and about the professional middle class, right? We've talked about that extensively over the years. And this is, yeah. And so this is kind of that part. The other thing that happened, right. And look, I don't know if there could have been a different approach to this, but because of the Vietnam War, right. And because of the atrocities that were taking place in the Vietnam War, right. You also had a break between the left, right, and soldiers, right? Not the military, but soldiers, right? And if you want to talk about a working class institution, if you want to talk about one of the largest working class institutions, right, it's the military, right? And that has persisted, right? And right now, we're at a point to revisit exactly that. I mean, we saw these, what these fascists did, right? Especially now when the military is, in, you know, is increasingly like the, like one of the kind of, you know, locations for last resorts, like places of last resort where you go to try to kind of get yourself like, you know, like a career, get yourself out of poverty to kind of make something, right? Because most of everything else, right, our union jobs, like our kind of like our safety net, right, even higher education has become increasingly kind of like, you know, unaffordable or not achievable for the vast majority of people. The military becomes one of the few places where people from the bottom rungs of our society, the poorest, the most vulnerable in our society, can go to try to get a leg up. Right. And so it's increasingly, not only is it increasingly even more working class because there's no draft, right? So the kind of middle class, the upper middle class, they don't go. Right. Or don't go into any kind of service like what they'd like to do in Germany. Right. So increasingly what happens is that the military became more black and brown, became more working class and kind of poor. Right. But it had no place to go politically other than the Republican Party. So like right now we've seen this happen now. We've seen that there's been folks in the military who have bought in to this QAnon fascist stuff, right? But a whole lot of those soldiers have not. And if now is not the time to kind of like go back and say, okay, look, we're going to start driving the wedge between these groups, right? For the sake of all of us, right? And, you know, this always gets into kind of like this territory where people don't like the military and people don't like war. Like, I get it, right? I understand where that's coming from, right? But we also got to be like clear-eyed about who's there, right? And if we're actually talking about being a working class-oriented movement, is like, we've got to be able to say, like, all the more reason we've got to stop the direction that the military has been on for so long. right? I mean, we saw this. Sean and I talked about this a while back about how they're suddenly finding out that this white supremacy stuff and this white nationalist crap is running rampant all through the military. And they started actually have to screen recruits even more because they were recognizing that you're just like prison, right? Prison is the place where they kind of recruit gang members. Well, that was a version of that same dynamic was happening in the military, right? There were white nationalists who had kind of established themselves in the military, in the kind of like among the troops and began recruiting people and say, hey, this is the place for you.
That's happening in Secret Service right now.
Absolutely.
Happening with the Capitol Police.
So, like, I mean, this is the kind of thing. Exactly. So this is the kind of thing I'm saying. Like, look, if you want to kind of organize for power, you got to look for these fractures in what's going on. Yes, the Republican Party is headed towards a civil war. And I think for those of us on the left, we have to do everything in our power to kind of exacerbate that split.
Kick them while they're down.
And basically say, Sean and I have been talking all week, because it's been a freaking crazy week. And, the one of the things that I keep on coming back to is look, I believe, and I think Sean said this first, and I agree with this, is that now is the time you need a kind of like anti-fascist coalition, right? But, and that this doesn't mean like what the whole like, let's all get along, let's all come together and figure out our strategy together. And like, we're all in this together and welcome with open arms, the kind of like, hashtag resistance people. Anybody who doesn't like Trump comes in and we'll work it out together. No. I'm saying this is the time for an aggressive left, broad left, right?
New Deal.
Coalition with an aggressive agenda that leaves the door open for people who want to join, right? We basically said, look, we want you to kind of join this too as well, to kind of put down these fascists once and for all and kind of change the direction of this country away from where it's been going.
I mean, I think you're also seeing it right now happening with the Republican Party. People are leaving in droves at the moment. Early registration, voter registration switches are showing that Republicans are leaving the Democratic Party versus Democrats leaving the Republican Party by a 10-1 margin. The Democrats who are switching to the Republican side right now are pretty much people who didn't change party registration before the election, and they're doing it anyway. But you have hundreds of Republicans leaving, over 130 Republicans left the county, in Allegheny or Lancaster or Lebanon, not Lebanon, but Cumberland County. Like, there are droves of people leaving the Republican Party now. And I think, if and when more violence occurs this weekend, that is only going to drive that wedge even more. I think the violence we're going to be seeing, with the insurrectionists and the threats are against capitals, and if they storm Capitol buildings, that was a death spiral for the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
Like, there are no more. I don't know how you can say otherwise. I think we're witnessing the death spiral of the Republican Party. I don't even think there's going to be a civil war in the Republican Party. I think it's just going to collapse on its own. I think people are going to be leaving and switching to an independent or to the Democratic side. Democrats have to do a job of reaching out to these voters. Because, these are the voters that are going to put you in power. Maybe there are enough voters switch, say, in Pennsylvania 10 to get a more moderate Democrat like Eugene DePasquale, who I think is really good with his job and takes it seriously, over someone like a Scott Perry, an insurrectionist. Like, I don't see how Scott Perry's political career lasts after this week. Apparently he's trying to run for U.S. Senate, or he's thinking about making a run. Like, that is just going to be inflammatory, in my opinion.
Let's be clear though, but this is one thing that I think is important, right, for all of us to keep in mind, right, for both to prevent cynicism on the left, right, and to kind of stave off some of those corporate Democrats, is by reaching out to those people, right? We're not talking about saying changing the agenda to and kind of more moderating the party. Right. It means actually doing that kind of the on the ground work of organizing and talking with voters. Right. And then I think that you look for the,
the deep organizing that PA stands up.
That's exactly right. That's exactly where I was going. Yep. Exactly.
The deep canvassing.
Right. And we've seen what PA stands up has done when it was Lancaster stands up. Right. I mean, the conversations that started there, and we saw this all in the pipeline resistance stuff too, right? Where when when organizers were actually having conversations with other folks in their communities, right? And not trying to kind of convince them of a pre-existing agenda, but looking for where the fault lines were, looking for where there was shared interest and organizing around that. Right. Because you might have someone who's a conservative, right, who also does say doesn't want the pipeline, doesn't want their land taken away and have a pipeline running through the yard because they're worried about their water supply. Right. You don't want the precondition for kind of bringing that person in there and say, OK, you have to accept everything else here. No, you use that as a place to build. Right. And, you know, and Lancaster stands up and now PA stands up, has been doing that all over the state. And that's the kind of stuff, you know, that's absolutely critical. If you think back to what DSA, you know, what DSA was doing across the state, I remember like the first time I heard about it, this at least in the state of Pennsylvania, was out in Pittsburgh when they were doing just like a taillight check. You remember this?
Yeah.
Right. Helping replace the light bulbs in taillights. And that seems like if you're like you're talking about, you know, that's not politics. You're damn right it was politics. Because a broken taillight was the thing that would get people pulled over more often than not. And that place, the police officer pulling over, especially African-American and black and brown communities and poor communities, when they get pulled over by police, the chances of that escalating into a bad situation increases dramatically. So you do something little like this, where we're going to replace that taillight. We're going to do it for free. We have done by volunteers. And that becomes an opportunity to kind of protect the community, do something tangible, and build out the organization, right? I mean, that's the kind of work I think is absolutely critical right now. So I don't know.
Yeah,
Sean, just so you know, I've got a picture of you up on our YouTube stream, and we have a comment from Radical Flower who says, Sean, you need some of your photos on the wall behind you. So
yeah, I know.
So
I'm still
This is actually a picture. This is like a selfie that you took that we used before when you're having video issues. So then when we get a chance, we're going to have to get a picture with some of your pictures behind you or something like that, so that folks can enjoy your photography as when your video glitches.
Yeah, no, I've been toying back and forth with the idea of what I want to use, like behind on that blank wall. I think I might make some bigger prints and just have that instead of like small photos going across. So, you know,
there we go.
We'll see.
Yeah. We can flush that one out a little bit in today's last call. So if Radical Flower, you're sticking around, you can hear Sean's kind of decorating ideas. I assume that if you've seen his photos, if people have seen Sean's photos posted there, you've also seen his, you know, his new fashion channel, which is which we could also talk about in today's last call. So that's
good. Hey, more money, more problems.
There you go, more money. Right, exactly.
No.
But yeah, so yeah, I don't know, but I think that's where we're at, right? Yeah, so all that's going ahead. And, you know, the one thing I just threw in these two things. Go ahead, sorry.
James, do you want to talk about James Comey?
Oh, sure, go ahead. I was deciding whether or not I wanted to get myself all worked up about him or not.
Fuck that guy. That's all I got to say.
I could not believe it, Sean.
Yeah. He must be on the take.
I don't know what else, like, what other explanation you have. I mean, you would think, like, okay, I'm not even saying that he should have come out and kind of like, you know, like against Trump. I'm just saying, just keep his freaking mouth shut. And the fact that, you know, that his words are getting picked up by media outlets too as well is just, that's another version of like, why are you listening to that guy?
Yeah.
That's the guy that violated FBI protocol, right? It was an open kind of like, you know, discussion about Hillary Clinton's emails. He broke the protocol not to kind of enter into that discussion.
The weekend before the election.
The weekend before the election, and then raises doubts. Oh, investigation, ongoing investigation with their emails. When he knew there was nothing there, at the same time, there was concrete intelligence about what was happening in the Trump campaign that he didn't disclose. I think, well, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we see eye to eye on this one. I think that, you know, you can't point to just one thing about why Trump won the election. So you can't say like James Comey, he was it, right? That was it. And then it had it been for James Comey, she would have won the election. So, well, but if you look at, if you, anything, if you look at the statistics about like the polling, right? The polling numbers drop off right after Comey did that for Hillary Clinton. Right. So if you wanted to have to, you know, pick your single bullet of like what happened, it's like that's pretty as close as you can come. So, you know, James Comey like owns as much of the responsibility for having Trump in that White House as anybody else. Right. And so for him to come out now and say we should pardon, you should consider pardon Trump for the good of the country. Bullshit, man.
Yeah, I mean, he only encouraged a fucking violent insurrection.
I mean, come on. And you know, again, it's like you're supposedly a law enforcement officer, and you got like a cop that's dead because of it. Another one who's losing his eye.
One that like died by suicide.
One died by suicide. Dozens sent to the hospital for injuries, being beat by these freaking people. Like, he doesn't even have loyalty to his own freaking, like, law enforcement crew. Let alone, like, I don't know, like, a sense that this is fucking serious.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, just fuck that guy. That's all I got to say. I wanted to throw in these two things just at the end. I'm not a whole lot to say about it, but, you know, what's interesting that you're seeing what's on the labor front right now is that if this is any sense about where things are going, you remember Sean and I have talked a lot about the fact that what happened during the Obama administration was, you know, progressives all got together and organized. You know, all these people got to organize. Obama took office. Obama said, I got this, and everybody went home, right? That's not happening this time. And so the fact that you have ahead of this, of the inauguration coming up, you've got, like, number one, you've got D.C. hotel workers from Unite Here basically saying, look, we need to keep, as part of our safe of doing self safety, keeping things safe, we need to keep these freaking nut jobs like out of the Capitol. And therefore, we don't want to be at work, right? That's essentially what that statement said. It said, look, unless you're housing security personnel, the hotel should be closed. And again, they didn't say this directly, but you know, if you refuse to do this, maybe we're not going to show up at work en masse.
And also
for our own,
I think one thing safety. We didn't put in this. On yeah. the labor front, props to like the flight attendants unions, the
oh,
different
God.
Airline unions,
totally
for getting these people on the no-fly lists
totally.
And having and providing the internet with some great Schadenfreude of people like complaining they're on the fucking terrorist watch list at this point.
They
like,
put me on a terrorist. They call me a terrorist. They won't let me on. It's what they do. Ruin my life.
I mean, you see people getting pulled off airplanes at this point.
Yeah.
Later on. You've seen people crying about this as they fucking should be treated like that. So props to like the airline unions for pushing for them to get onto the terrorist no-fly list.
Absolutely.
Because what they did commit was an act of terrorism.
Absolutely.
Like, let's just be honest with that. So.
Absolutely. And the fact that there were pipe bombs and that there were Molotov cocktails and other kind of weapons that were there. And these are the folks that would kind of brought them to D.C. I mean, come on. Doesn't take a freaking, like, you know, genius to think that these people should definitely be on the no-fly list. So crazy. So that's freaking awesome. And also, you've got ahead of the inauguration, you got fast food workers are calling for a nationwide strike this Monday, calling for a $15 an hour minimum wage and a union. That's, again, a ballsy move, right? Because what a lot of times you see happening ahead of an inauguration, well, we don't want to kind of like, you know, take over the spotlight. We don't want to disrupt this because we are going to have to work with the Democrats and we don't want to upset them. That's what we saw kind of happen in the past a lot of times was from labor leaders. But, you know, the growing movement of kind of militant, kind of grassroots rank and file movements that have been fueling the kind of labor organizing that we've been seeing over the past several years. They're basically, no. We're going to send the message now. We want, you said $15 an hour minimum wage. We've been calling for this. We want to make sure you remember. Right. So they're calling for that kind of strike on Monday, which is freaking awesome. So I think we're going to see a whole lot more of that going forward. I really, really hope so. So cool. Any other comments on the front half, Sean?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. So if you give us a little break, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little about what's been happening right here in Pennsylvania, which has been, again, kind of mirroring what's happening on a national level, has been pretty crazy. I want to remind you that you become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. For as little as $5 a month. And if you become a patron through the end of the month of January, you can have your choice of one of our one of these two books, On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century by Timothy Snyder, or Michael Brooks, Against the Web, A Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right. Anything that you can do to help us would be great. If you're sitting there, you're not sure if you want to become a patron at this point, you can always go to paypal.me/rcpress. That's paypal.me/rcpress. And drop us a few bucks, right? Drop us, $5, $10, $100 if you want. That would be absolutely fantastic. Everything that you can do, all the contributions that go into this show are going to help growing it out and put it here. We've already seen the expansion of this podcast into our Monday Out to Coop live show. I'd like to do a kind of one more round of that. I'd like to have one additional show per week, if at all possible. But got to keep it at pace with what we can actually support. So anything that you can do to kind of help support this show, help support the work that we do in building kind of progressive media in the state of Pennsylvania, we'd love it. So we'll be back right after this quick break. And when we come back, we'll be here and talking about PA politics. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Back in a minute.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1888. That was the day novelist Edward Bellamy published his futuristic utopian novel, Looking Backward, 2000 to 1887. The protagonist, Julian West, wakes up in the year 2000 to find that industry has been nationalized and wealth, goods, and services have been equitably distributed. People work less, retire early, and enjoy greater leisure. Looking Backwards was so popular that by 1900, only Uncle Tom's Cabin and Ben-Hur had sold more copies. Bellamy's utopia solved problems of capitalism through the development of a socialistic society. Bellamy denied he was a socialist and instead referred to his vision as nationalist. The novel sparked a political movement virtually overnight. Bellamites, as they were called, formed nationalist clubs across the country. They attempted to organize a people's party around these clubs, which soon dissolved into the populist movement of the 1890s. Looking Backwards was a response to the Gilded Age world of monopolies and trusts, depressions, and often violent class convulsions. Bellamy was quick to indict the banks, the railroads, and the corrupt political system that served them. Sociologist Arthur Lippow argues in his book that while Bellamy may have expressed anti-capitalist sentiments, his future is one in which there is no democratic public life or political process. For Lippow, Bellamy's particular collectivist view is militaristic and bureaucratic, and does away with representative bodies of any kind. Socialist Party leader Eugene V. Debs credited his own political development in part to reading Looking Backwards. He noted that, regardless of whether Bellamy considered himself a socialist, his novel generated popularity and enthusiasm for socialist ideas, causes, and politics.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. I'm here once again with our failed coup survivor, Sean?
Death call coup survivor.
Once again, I want to remind you all too as well that we've had increasing numbers of people that are joining us on our YouTube channels. When we're kind of doing our podcast, we're also streaming live on our YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this right now on our regular podcast feed and not watching on YouTube, make sure that you head over to our YouTube page, right? Just go to YouTube, look for Raging Chicken, and subscribe, and then hit that little bell, right? So every time that we go live, you get that little notification to let you know that, hey, you're live, so you get kind of head on over. My guess is that there's going to be increasing opportunities to use our YouTube channel as a place to kind of reach out kind of in a kind of more kind of, immediate response kind of stuff, little commentary, little things that are going on, and do some live streams from here and there. So make sure you hit that little bell, subscribe to our YouTube channel, hit that little bell and get that notification. So anytime that we go live that you'll know. There we go. I also talked to Sean just for information for Radical Flower, so that he's gonna, you know, maybe see if he can get us some pictures of him in front of his too as well. So anytime that his video gets a little glitchy, we'll be able to have that one. So anyway, Sean, like I know that you have been following your good friend Doug Mastriano quite a bit lately, and it seems like that there's I don't know, a lot of buzz going on about him lately.
Yeah, so Mastriano has been reports coming out this week, I guess. You know, he spent $3,400 in campaign cash to pay for bus trips down to the insurrection rally in D.C., which, you know, is kind of amazing. You know, way to go, Doug, and create a paper trail with your campaign finance reporting, you know.
Always love that.
Whatchamacallit. Mastriano has also been going on QAnon podcasts recently. Media Matters has been tracking that and seeing what he has to say, you know. And one of the podcasts leading up to the insurrection rally, he called it a death match with the Democratic Party. Pretty much, like, again, like what we've been saying for months now, how he's been using violent extremist rhetoric for a while.
Right, exactly.
And then, you know, he is calling people not to go protest this week, which we'll see, which will be interesting.
This guy, we should remind everybody that this is a guy who's been one of the favorites for the Republican nomination for to run for governor, right? And so this is why, of course, Mastriano is attracting so much attention, right? Because he's, you know, this is, you know, the great white hope of the PA Republican Party at this point.
I mean, we'll see. There are a bunch of people who are putting their names out there. But, you know, definitely establishment Republicans are scared of him running and him getting the nomination. I think the money class within the Republican Party is going to be scared of him running and get the nomination. You know, I think we saw with, like, Stacey Garrity, she beat Joe Torsella, who spent $2 million on his campaign. She only raised $100,000. Like, you know, like, these people have gotten embedded with the social media infrastructure that came from the reopen movement and the coronavirus outbreak. And he's been just proliferating his presence, online presence, within those organizations. And he, I mean, I think he has a leg up in this. Some people don't. They think the Republican consultants think they could probably just take him out. I don't see that. I see him getting through the primary process, but we'll see.
So do you think that what he's just done and this past week has changed any of the calculus around who might emerge as the front runner in the Republican Party? Or do you think that this is the PA Republican Party right now?
I think it's the PA Republican Party right now. I mean, like, you had no statements of condemnation coming from Jay Corman or the Senate Republican leadership. They used this, like, he was down there peacefully protesting. Bull fucking shit with those words, right? I mean, like, you attended a fascist rally. Doesn't matter if you were, like, breaking windows or standing in the background. Like, you turned into a – you showed up at a fascist rally that turned into an insurrection.
Right.
Like, a failed coup attempt. Like, I don't see this notion that he was remaining peaceful, so therefore he shouldn't be, like – condemned for doing what he did. And I've heard that from some liberals too on Twitter, that it was a peaceful protest. No, stop calling it that fucking word, peaceful protest. It was an insurrection. It was a fascist rally, and fascist rallies are not peaceful. Like,
right.
claiming that a fascist rally is peaceful because no one got shot, you know, is fucking bullshit. Like, sorry.
No, no. Like, look, I, you know, I talked a little bit about this on Monday's Out to Coop Live, and one of the things that I think is absolutely critical, this is like the other side of the both siderisms, right? And, like, because look, there is, and I think we talked about this last Friday too as well. There is a concern when you see, like, say, Joe Biden starting talking about wanting to introduce new terrorism legislation. We should be concerned about that. Right. We don't need more police state tools. OK, so, the fact that, you know, and a lot of Democrats have been kind of like raised in that kind of 9/11 mentality where you just have to, anything that says terrorism in it, you're going to vote for. Right. Because, you know, you want to be strong, you're against terrorism and all this kind of stuff. And, in the wake of 9/11, right, we had such like a rapid advancement of this police state, a militarized police state, because everybody was afraid of kind of like, you know, bucking the kind of like, you know, anti-terrorist discourse. So we got to be very cautious about kind of wanting to expand that stuff, right? So that's number one. And so when people are kind of saying there's a protest, right, and a rally, that permitted rally, right, that took place at, like, outside the Capitol, right, there's reason to be concerned about wanting to jump too quickly and kind of say, no, we need to put down those kind of protests. Because any tool that we put in place now, I guarantee you, will be used against the left. Right. However, right, having said that, yes, it is true that we should not be condemning vociferous, even kind of, you know, passionate protests, even civil disobedience. Right. We don't need to condemn those tools. Right. But what the Republicans are trying to do right now, and some Democrats, but what Republicans are trying to do, the discourse that you were just talking about, what they're trying to do is to separate out the people that went into the Capitol from the people that were peacefully protesting, right? And the fact is, it's not that easy to separate that stuff out, right? Yeah. Especially like, when you are... Now, here's the difference. I was looking up some of the difference of this here, too, as well. Sedition... Right. When you commit sedition, right, it is speech that is being used to encourage violent action against the state. That's what Mastriano and his people have been doing. Right. That's the connection. So because he didn't enter the Capitol, yet he was instrumental in getting people down there and helping fan the flames of insurrection with what he's saying on those QAnon stations, what he probably said on the buses down there. I'd love to see some of that video. That's the connection between them. That's why he should be accountable and linked to the violence. He wasn't grandma who's been duped by Fox News who went down there in her wheelchair holding an American flag. No.
No, this guy's flung himself to the front of this white nationalist, white supremacist movement over the past 9 months. He's became their darling, their star, their cult leader. And, like, you can't just fucking say it was peaceful. No, these rallies are not peaceful. Yeah, just because there's a Klan rally going on and no one got shot or no one got killed doesn't mean it's peaceful. Like, I mean, like, liberals have to, like, get it through their fucking heads that, like, fascist speech is hate speech and is not a peaceful rally. Right? Like, the rallies that, like, Mastriano has been having over the past 9 months are not peaceful rallies. Simply because like no one got hurt does not mean it's not peaceful.
Right.
Like it's just bullshit that, like, you have fucking liberals who are saying this stuff, and it's just like, or and trying to parse out too. Well, they're like, well, like I got in the, it's like I called someone, it's like, no, you're acting like a joke right now. I said, I got in the back and forth with someone on Twitter last night. Like you're making yourself look like a fool by claiming that Mastriano shouldn't be held accountable because he didn't go in the Capitol. He remained a peaceful protester. No, he's an insurrectionist who has been calling for insurrection and has been spewing violent rhetoric for months now. Like he's been setting these flames for months.
Well, it's like this. I always say you put it in a different context, right? Let's say we're talking about, say, like a terrorist organization. Okay. And like a foreign terrorist organization. Right. And say that there's some leaders of that organization, right, who themselves personally have never committed a violent act. They have not gone in and kind of like, you know, broken into state capitals. They haven't kind of like shot kind of like American personnel or something like this.
Haven't like called for the execution or tried kidnapping governors.
Or they sat and they basically have been educating the people who do that stuff. For years, they bring them there. They tell them about stuff. They talk about how the kind of like American is the devil. They talk about the ways that it has to be brought down by any means necessary. They have to kind of like use and kind of like have their rewards in heaven, right? You know, all this other kind of garbage, right? But because they didn't do the act, do we say, oh, no, they're fine? Of course we don't. It's crazy. Because you know how that works. There's a connection between the education and the training and the words and the discourse and the actions of the people that actually carry it out. There's a difference between, right, the leaders of the Nazi Party and the brown shirts, right? But they're connected. This is why a mob functions in the way that it does. The mob leaders, yeah, okay, probably they've got some blood on their hands, absolutely, right? But once they establish themselves as leaders, a lot of times they don't, you know, they're just going to kind of encourage particular kinds of actions, right? So because the mob guys have got a stand-up kind of business owner in a particular community that donates a lot to the causes, right? Do we say, oh, well, he didn't do it. It's just like, you know, his friend is the one who assassinated his competition. So, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. Come on.
Recently to not certify Pennsylvania's.
We've got to use some freaking basic common sense here, folks. And stop this kind of like inability, you know, to kind of think practically about like a concrete threat to any kind of hope for the expansion of democracy in this country.
And speaking of like chief enablers in this, Senate Pro Temp Jay Corman went on TV this morning and said Democrats are trying to spike the football, blaming the Capitol violence on their voter fraud claims. He says he still stands by his calling for Congress to decertify Pennsylvania's results or delay the certification of the results. Like,
yeah, how you doing with that civility caucus? Right?
So, I mean, like, there's just as much blood on Mastriano's hands as there are on Jake Corman's and Brian Cutler's hands for fanning the flames of these lies and running with these lies for months, or like allowing the Republicans to go ahead with it and not do anything. Like, I talk about another Republican candidate, someone who's ran for House, someone who's ran for Senate, someone's ran for Congress. Frank Scavo from Northeastern Pennsylvania and Old Forge organized the bus trip from
Old
Forge.
I hear they got great pizza up there.
Yeah, fuck Old Forge pizza. It's horrible.
I had to get you to say that. Sorry. I needed a sound drop for a future show. Sorry.
He told reporters that he was nowhere near the Capitol. Then he told them he was close, but he didn't go in. And then the WNEP, the local news station in Northeastern Pennsylvania, found a picture of him in the middle of the insurrection mob inside the Capitol. Whoops.
Whoops.
Yeah. And it's
lies like, will take you only so far.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Mastriano was lying about his complete involvement in the insurrection rally. I wouldn't be surprised. There might be rumblings of that in the future. I'm not sure, but it will be interesting. So, yeah. And
I would love to see if, you know, some of these people that went down on the buses, right? Because you know that they were taking pictures inside and doing some video inside those buses down there. All it's going to take is like a couple of those folks to break, right, and get spooked by what just took place, right, and then just be like, okay. Well, because, you know, the FBI has basically been – I mean, it's been great how this has been. This is whatever. This is kind of like, you know, what the FBI has been doing is basically they've encouraged people who participated in this stuff to turn themselves in, right? Especially after the parlor hack, right? Basically saying like, look, you know, it's kind of like the reverse mob mentality. You might want to help yourself a little bit here. You know, you didn't kind of do anything bad, but you know, you might be concerned about some of the things that you posted on parlor. And now we've got all this data and all this information. You might just want to talk to us. Right. And they say, oh, we've had quite a few leads because of that. Thank you very much. Right. By them saying that, that people have been coming forward and basically coming forward is also going to be freaking people out and causing more people to come forward. So.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, in the midst of all this, right, when you talk about
now we have Republicans. We have Republicans now continuing their own attacks and advancing these lies.
Right.
You know, with the gerrymandering of the Supreme Court.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're now weaponizing these lies that they spent months going to about claims of voter fraud or claims of conspiracies or claims the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was changing Act 77 to favor Democrats and Governor Wolf. They are now going ahead and moving the gerrymander of the Supreme Court. Pretty much like this will ensure that Republicans maintain control of the courts. They lost control in 2015 when they lost three seats. We elect our courts through statewide initiatives. I don't know if this will be able to make it on the primary ballot. The Republicans are going to try to. I don't know if the timing is there because it came out of committee last week, and I think session might be canceled due to the events that are might be happening in the Pennsylvania Capitol next week with the insurrection rallies. So this may push the timeline back another week. And
this is like the second time that they've stepped on their own plans. This is great. The first was the COVID outbreak. Now we've got this.
And I also think like, Democrats and the left and the progressive movement in the state really have to use the insurrection and the violence that happened in DC, sink it to the Republicans and sink this plan. Like basically like this is them using minoritarian control. This is them attacking our election, continuing the lies of Donald Trump and wanting to control power in a dictatorial way.
100%.
I mean, the messaging here now is there. Like, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's
not some sort of like, you know, think tank cooked up like messaging. It's like what's actually happening in the world. You know, it's like,
yeah. So,
crazy. Yeah. So, you know, they put that down. So I mean, did you have anything else on that one?
No, I really don't.
So I just think we should, let me say this first, cause then we can close this section out with some good news. The one thing, this is kind of more the, let's do the good news. And then we'll kind of clean out with a little bit of kind of like, throwing some shade at the end. Elizabeth Fiedler, right?
Yes. Well, first, Jim Brewster got seated.
Yes, absolutely.
You had Nikhil Saval talking about the solidarity and how that worked within the caucus, using a lot more like socialist or, left rhetoric around these issues. Brewster is a moderate, more conservative Democrat from Western Pennsylvania, but it was great seeing the caucus and the party rally behind this, even in a partisan way. I think it shows how organized and willing to fight Democrats are in this state on these issues. We now have Elizabeth Fiedler forming a subcommittee within the House Democratic Policy Committee, basically called the Progressive Policies for Working People, which is awesome.
It's amazing.
I think we're seeing the 2018 class and the 2020 class get more control of the caucus with leadership. Within leadership, you have a younger leadership team in there now with the latest group that came in with McClinton and with Bradford, with the Pizarro and others and Schlossberg. At least we're seeing some of that power being given to the newer members coming in, like Rick Kudrowski, Elizabeth Fiedler, and Rod O'Summerlee, who spent the past couple of years killing it. And there's also the Legislative Climate Caucus.
Which is amazing, right? I mean, we have I actually got an email about this, where you've got Representative Danielle Friel Otten, right? She's a Democrat from Chester, is going to be the chair of that committee.
And she got elected because of her fight against the pipeline going through her community.
Right. She's someone who got in there and was like,
as an unabashed progressive.
100%.
Unabashed progressive. She beat Becky Corbin, a Republican who won their district by like 10 points, and smoked Corbin in the 2018 election. She won again in 2020. Didn't change her like attitude on things.
She's unapologetic about climate and about the pipeline, and she has not walked away from that a bit.
Yeah, and she's unapologetic about her progressive stances on everything, which is awesome. You have Rick Kudrowski as the secretary, and then you have Nancy Gunst,
who is now
she replaced Representative Tom Mert in the Hatboro area. So a little backstory, pretty much like that seat was handed to her from Mert, from what I understand or from talking. Mert and Gunst have a really long relationship within local politics in that part of Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be an awesome representative. She's a veteran in the Air Force, I believe, one of the military branches. And she left a little note on the door, her office door, for the insurrectionist, which I thought was awesome. I put it up on Twitter. She pretty much said, dear insurrectionists, if you've made it this far, go fuck yourselves. God bless America.
I love it. And she signs it.
Yes.
And she signed it, which is freaking amazing.
She signed it.
Amazing.
Yes.
I mean, if you haven't seen that, you got to check out Sean's Twitter feed. And it just that was unbelievable. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So, and then you've got it. You've got as a the secretary of the climate caucus, legislative climate caucus, you got Rick Kujewski, right? I mean, and you know, he's been on Out to Coop Live. You know, Rick Kujewski is like, he ran kind of strictly from the left, right? He kind of, in the West Philadelphia, he kind of like beat the longtime incumbent, right, from West Philly in the primary. And now he's freaking like, you know, the lefty is going to be in the climate caucus. Are you going to be freaking kidding me? This is awesome. So I don't know. I mean, when you sent that thing, I had flagged this stuff about the climate caucus. When you had sent this about Elizabeth Fiedler getting, you know, chairing out the progressive policies for working people subcommittee.
And also, like, I mean, this Democrats are going to use the policy committees the way the Republicans use them.
Yeah.
You know, like we've been talking about this for the past few years. Democrats haven't really done this the way the House Republicans or Senate Republicans have. Like that's the tip of the spear for their policy agenda. And Republicans use that to their advantage by bringing in Koch brother operatives, pushing their agenda. Like, you know, we've been following this stuff. And it's time we Democrats start doing the same. Like, use this as a spear to bludgeon people with, policy-wise. You know, not physically like what happened in the Capitol last week. But like,
no, but this is not even bludgeon. This is kind of like, this is like how you push these policies forward. Right.
Yes, I mean, this is about the Democratic mainstream.
Right. This is about being aggressive in pursuit of your policy goals. Right. I mean, this is like, you know, like, because like, let's put it this way. Here's the difference. Right. Is like when the Republicans were doing this, they were doing this as a way of hurting people. Right. I mean, actively hurting people. Right. Real people in the world. Here you're
going after Medicare, going after unions, going after like other things.
Exactly. Right. I mean, this is like, you know. I mean, if you look at, you know, like just what they've been doing to the state system of higher education where I work, right? The kind of like defunding of it and the gutting of it and the austerity that's been there. Not just and this has happened in like industry and public sector across the state about the, you know, the turnpike, selling off public assets. I mean, one after the other, they've been hurting people. Well, you're talking about the policy agenda of like of the progressives is about ensuring people that have health care coverage. Right. About making sure that our planet's not going to burn down and to not be like collaborationists with the fossil fuel industries and burning down that planet. I mean, come on. To basically make sure that people's union rights and organizing rights are protected under law in Pennsylvania. Right. I mean, these are not like about, say, hurting people. These are about helping people. And if the Republicans want to get in the way of that, right, this is by organizing in these, you know, in these caucuses. This is a way of you get past them. You build up the energy, you build up momentum. And then, yes, if they get in the way and they get steamrolled, well, that's on them. But really, the goal is to make sure that people are helped. Right. It's no longer this drama about what happens just inside Harrisburg. This is about using those caucuses as a way to achieve policy aims in the real world. And this is what the Democrats have been lacking for a long time, especially in the state.
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, last night, Chancellor McDreamy, you know, Chancellor Greenstein from PASHE, ran into a little trouble. They decided, you know, he was trying to pull off another one of his examples of, you know, I'm just going to get on and use my charm appeal with my kind of hip little kind of like dark rim glasses. And I'm going to get my nice little green screen with a backdrop of the Dixon Center, which I just sold off, by the way, with the Dixon Center. And I'm going to have an open kind of like discussion with a Spotlight PA and about what's happening with the state system. And, after you stop, you know, you keep on doing things to hurt people, like, for example, like laying off or kind of getting rid of like upwards of 300 faculty members and kind of eliminating whole departments at IUP, about forcing the consolidations of other universities, making everybody fear for their jobs, kind of invoking austerity and steamrolling over the legislative process, all that kind of stuff. Eventually, that kind of nice little shine that you came in with, that, you know, that Silicon Valley, I love Bill Gates and Bill Gates is my buddy shine, gets scuffed up a little bit. And it gets harder and harder to pull off, you know, they're kind of like, ah, you know, I'm such a nice guy. I'm going to give you my winning smile. Ding! It was like one of those commercials. You smile and that little sparkle comes out. Well, that wasn't happening so much in this open call with PA Spotlight last night. And they invited other people to join the call. I'm sorry. My bad. Yeah. It still pisses me off that they called themselves that after you guys, whatever. But Spotlight PA, they kind of opened this, opened it up for other people to join in. And it didn't go so well for Greenstein at some times. So just a couple tweets that came out from Spotlight PA. So here you go. Yasmina is the handle on that. Let me just tell you who she was there. She is one of the, I guess, reporters for Spotlight PA. She's also has bylines in Teen Vogue, Bitch Media, Berg News, and so on like this. So she was one of the folks that was asking these questions. And so she says, like, so what do you say to students who felt unsafe on campuses that had more COVID-19 cases than others? Like my campus at Kutztown University, we're leading the pack. Greenstein said, I had not heard that. I think our campuses were very secure. Now, let's remember that Chancellor Greenstein, there was an open forum that he was invited to and he refused to come. That those students that I'm going to be talking to on Monday from KU activists, they sent out open calls, invitations to Greenstein. They have a whole list of the problems that are going on and sent it to him. And he responded to them, no, thanks. We're just going to kind of go with whatever Hawkinson says. So, like, you know, kudos to Spotlight PA for basically putting that question forward, because they already knew the answer to that. They know students were concerned. He's like, oh, I'm just, I don't know. And then said, then they were asked about students who said they had tried to reach Greenstein last year, but did not get a response. And he said, oh, I read all my emails and I will respond to them. If students have a question, I can answer. Right. So he's backpedaling. And then, right, if that's not enough on the COVID-19 stuff, he gets asked, have you examined Pashi's history of racism and systemic issues that may continue to oppress? And he's like, I have not. And I'm a historian, so I'm ashamed to admit that, but I have it and I should. Well, how can you address racism without understanding the role that it's played in the past? And he says, I'm not sure. Right. And he's called on people to understand that most of his career has been in urban settings and to know that he is listening to people of color about rural issues. He really is. So it was nice to actually have him face the media. And this is precisely why he's refused to show up into all these open forums, because he knows full well that he and his collaborators in the university president's offices have refused to actually have meetings with people who actually have real concerns. They've gone the 100% PR move in here. So about time that came back to haunt you, Mr. Greenstein. So that was just a little fun to see that in my little Twitter feed this morning. I wish I could have actually been on the Zoom call. I know some other folks that were there. I believe some of the students that we're going to talk to on Out the Coop Live on Monday were actually on that call, so we'll get some of their perspectives on it. But yeah, so that was fun, Sean. I always like it when Chancellor McDreamy gets got taken down a peg or two.
Yep, definitely.
Crazy. Anything else going on in PA? Any late breaking news on Twitter?
No, nothing really.
All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be back right after this break with this week's Last Call. Want to remind you that you become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. And if you become a patron before the end of the month, you can have your choice of Michael Brooks' Against the Web, A Cosmopolitan Answer to the New Right, or Timothy Snyder's On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back after this quick break with this week's Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media.
and you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Altitude Podcast. It's our last call. We talk about kind of, you know, what's going on in our lives, kind of some beer we're drinking, give you some beer recommendations, what's happening. So I think the big question for this week, Sean, is what exactly are we been doing with all of our free time?
I mean, like, so my work schedule has been pretty busy. It's very similar to Donald Trump's work schedule. I get up very early, attend a lot of meetings, attend to have a lot of phone calls.
Got a lot of phone calls, been on the phone all day.
I love those tweets that he puts out about his schedule. The president will be up very early, taking many phone calls, many like meetings.
It's great. Got many meetings, got lots of phone calls. We didn't say this in the thing, but I think it was pretty cool. I guess the thing that really kind of threw him off his rocker this week was that the PGA says it's pulling its tournament from his New Jersey golf course.
I mean, I don't know how his brand is not damaged after last week.
Oh my God! Come on, it's got to be.
I mean, yeah,
I mean, it's got to be.
I can't wait to see. I actually think he's going to jail. I legitimately think he will be imprisoned after this.
We shall see. I mean, the big thing will be like, to what degree are we going to see like the Trump family then try to kind of like pick up that mantle? Because look, I mean,
I put them in jail as well.
Well, I would love that, but they've got like, you know, they've got the settings, they got the whole like setup for the grift going forward for the next 4 years, right?
I mean, I think at this point, like, I don't know how you don't charge them with insurrection or Article 14 resolutions.
Like, well, if Don Jr.,
like, the whole entire family has to be, like, passed resolution. These people cannot ever hold office again.
Well, not if James Comey gets his way.
Which is fucking stupid.
Right? I mean, it's like, seriously. But that's what I wish I could remember what I was listening to the other day. But, they, you know, we're talking – some, like – scholar of fascism and authoritarianism and stuff. So it's like, you know, well, you can be, if you don't nip this in the bud now, history shows that this will just build, right? And this is most of these kind of fascist, right-wing, authoritarian movements, they have multiple failures before they kind of move forward. And so, you know, you got to nip this stuff now. Otherwise, I mean, you know, at the very least, right, the best case scenario is if you don't prosecute these people is that the Trump administration or the Trump family will just be grifting big time for the next 4 years. And we will all, whether or not they run for office, the consequences of that, because what they're going to do in the minds of those freaking people that are out there storming the Capitol is just they're going to keep on fanning those flames. So
keep on holding rallies and stuff like that.
So, exactly. And yeah. Then it's just a question of like, you know, does Hawley or whoever else is going to pick up that mantle and kind of, you know, pour more gas on that fire. So anyways, but so you've been busy.
Yeah, I guess so. I've been working on getting new shirts, upping my wardrobe.
I'm telling you, your fashion channel's been kicking it lately.
I haven't really been doing too much since. I'm just waiting for the weather to get warmer. Think about how I'm going to design, get stuff for the deck. I really am looking forward to getting a nice small grill for the deck. Be able to I didn't grill at all last summer because the thing I had was just a piece of shit at the point.
Yeah.
I'm looking to get like a small Weber. Looking to get some deck furniture, chairs. I'm like game planning this stuff out. I want an herb garden. Yeah. So
look at you go.
Can't wait.
Look at you go. I, and I think the one thing that, you know, I'm a bit disappointed that, that your video was so glitchy today, because that people are not going to be able to see that kind of like that beautiful baby's butt face you got going for you now after you shaved off that beard.
Yeah.
And the new haircut, and you got it all going on.
Yes. Oh yeah, definitely.
You definitely everywhere you got to get on Sean's feeds just for, you know, fashion advice, really, because he's he's got it going on. You know,
it was actually funny when you sent the Adidas ads you were getting to me from Instagram. I'm just like, yep, that's for me. that's how the targeted online ads work.
Totally. I was like, oh, look at this. This came to the wrong place. Oh boy, oh boy. But yeah, so I mean, I have to say is that I've been this is like the week before our classes start next week. So I've been, this week has just been, you know, in addition to everything going on in the world, it's just been a lot of just tons of work. It's always a lot of work right before the beginning of the semester. It's extra work this year, especially because you know, my kids are home from school. So it's like trying to manage my own work and again confronting once again that not having kind of periods of time that I can actually work on this stuff uninterrupted really messes with my sleep schedule, because I end up staying up really late and blah blah blah. So, and it's been a lot of that this week, but I've been giving myself this little reward. I've been watching this series called The Last Kingdom, which I think I've mentioned this before, but it's like it takes place in like, you know, the 800s, I believe, in England, right, where the Danes, the Vikings, right, the Danes had basically taken over kind of the really significant part of England, and you had King Alfred was of the kingdom of Wessex, down in the kind of southern England, becomes, you know, he's the king that's called Alfred the Great, which had the vision for all of England, whatever. But it follows the story of Uhtred, I guess is how you say his name. He's the he was born a kind of a noble or something like this in the north of England that was taken over by the Danes, right? He gets shipped off to the Danes. He gets raised as a Dane. And so it's the story of him kind of making his way back and through through here and becoming an ally with King Alfred, but always having a tension relationship, blah, blah. But it's turning into like, you know, it's a good show, right? So it's been kind of cool to watch. It's something that's on Netflix. I'm saving up, I have to admit, is that I am not caught up on Star Trek Discovery, and I am not caught up on Golden Compass, or the not the Golden Compass, it's the His Dark Materials, which is, that's the name of the series. The Golden Compass was the first book, and so anyways, but His Dark Materials is an awesome show, and that is on, I believe that is on HBO, I think. That's a great show. That I absolutely love. But I've put it off because I knew I would just get drawn in. I would spend too much time with it. So that's going to be my reward once all my work is done, to finish off those two series, or get caught up with them where they are now. But that's been pretty much it. Been spending some time with my, you know, my kids when I can. Just we did get the chance to go up the mountains last weekend, which was, I can't tell you how head clearing that was. It was absolutely fantastic. It was cold. It was crisp. The night sky was amazing. But you know, it was just kind of empty. So like there was no one around. Got to walk in the woods, which is pretty cool. So my dog did eat a bunch of dog or deer poop and then ended up puking it on the rug in the house, but whatever. That's my fun, Sean. Oh, crazy. So, so let me give some updates on free will. So, for those folks who are joining us early or joining us for the first time, I always like to kind of, you know, I live in Perkasie and free will is based in Perkasie. And so I'm always kind of a big fan of supporting local stuff. And I absolutely just love their beer. I have to say, though, I haven't had very much beer of late because I've been working so much and getting this stuff here, and it's been good. But so they do have a new release this Saturday, which is going to get me to kind of there once again to buy some. It's called Fool's Gold Mash. And this is a new mash. And you've heard me talk about the mashes before. I love their mashes. They're fantastic. They're fruity. Their sours are great. But this will be available beginning Saturday at both locations at Perkasie and Peddler's Village. You can get it at their online store by going to freewillbrewing.store, and they are now shipping, right, not only to any address in Pennsylvania, but also Virginia and Washington, D.C., which is pretty cool. So, and if you hit that $85 threshold, right, you get $85 worth of stuff, they will ship it to you for free. Otherwise, you'll have to pay for that. So get together with some folks. You can have it shipped to you in those locations. But so Fool's Gold Mash, sorry, got off on a tangent. It's a sour ale with blueberry, grape, peanut butter, and bacon flavor and milk sugar. And this is how they describe it, a treat fit for a king or a queen. This combination slammed between a hollowed out loaf of bread was said to be a particular favorite of Elvis himself, whatever. It's a trip down jammy grape mixed with cooked peanuts on the nose, followed by a tart berry preserves, which lingers to the finish, combined at the end with a subtle savory note returned to creamy peanut butter at 7.5 ABV. So it's kind of like a peanut butter and jelly type of thing that they're going for. They also had last week, I didn't talk about this, but they had two bottle releases last week, which look really good for those folks who are who like their bottles. I haven't talked as much about their bottles of late, but they've got one new one. It's called Lock, Stock, and Two Aging Barrels. That is a barrel age old stock ale, and another one called Winter Beer, or just, you know, it's a winter beer. It's a barrel aged Belgian dark ale with orange zest, cinnamon, nutmeg, ginger, and vanilla. Those are the two latest bottle releases over there. And for their sours and their bottle releases are always absolutely fantastic. So you can always check that out too as well. Again, you can go to freewillbrewing.store. You can order online. You can order online ahead of time and kind of be like, head there. They'll have it ready for you. You can call ahead, let them know you're there. They'll bring it out to you. So you can have no contact or kind of minimal contact pickups. Or you pick them up at the store, pick them up at either one of those locations. They'll be there for you. So anything else you got going on for the weekend, Sean?
Nothing too much.
No,
I will not be in Harrisburg for the weekend.
Oh, so. Good choice.
Or for the next week. So spend some time away from the city is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Good for you. I'm just going to be doing all my schoolwork. Just getting ready for next week's work. So, great. Well, everybody, it's been a joy. Once again, thank you all for who are joining us on YouTube. I want to remind you that if you're listening to this podcast or if you join us on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell notification and make sure you get a notification every time we go live. You can also subscribe to us on any podcast platform. And if you are listening to our podcast, right, you listen on iTunes, on Podbean, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts, wherever it is, make sure you give us that 5-star review and leave us a little review there. That helps everybody else find our show. So the more that you can do those little things, share our show, make sure you leave us the review, give us that 5-star review. That's absolutely fantastic. And if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe and hit that notification button so you know when we're going live. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. It's been a great week. Sean, have a good one, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Catch you later.
All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to thank once again Jonathan Mann for our outro song for today, There Are No People in the Future. And I will be with you on Monday, out to Coop Live, talking to KU activists. Until then, it's a great one, everybody. See ya!